You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In addition to her 11 highly acclaimed novels, 5 children's books, and several volumes of nonfiction and poetry, Louise Erdrich has also produced numerous short stories over the course of her career. And although they've appeared in The New Yorker, Atlantic Monthly, The Paris Review, Best American Short Stories, O. Henry Prize Stories, and other publications, she's never put them into a collection, at least until now. A volume called The Red Convertible, Selected and New Stories, 1978-2008, has just been published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Louise Erdrich back to the show today. Hi.
Hi, it's good to be here.
I'm surprised you've taken so long to put together a collection. What led you to decide to do this now?
Well, I didn't really think I should put together something I'd already written. You know, I always try to put out something that's new, and there are some new stories that I haven't published before in this volume, but it finally was the urging of other people that led me to put it together.
Well, it's interesting in another way, because some of these stories became chapters in your novels, and they get changed in some cases, and so it's interesting to look at the idea as it first occurred to you and then think about what happened to it.
I thought that was interesting in looking back, because I hadn't realized how different the stories were in their first, at their first moment of inception, and when I first put them down, and they really were stories, and I had no idea they would go any farther. I really didn't know as I wrote them that they would be part of anything else, and I think that's part of the, I guess it's a sort of self-deluding magic that I have to keep going for myself.
Well, the title story, The Red Convertible, is the second chapter of Love Medicine, which was kind of a novel told in short stories. But you changed a lot when in transposing it from being just a short story to becoming a part of that book.
It did change a lot. I was surprised.
Names changed.
Oh, all the names are different all through. I didn't realize as I was writing the stories that they might be connected to some other character somewhere else in a book I was working on.
So when you're writing a story, you're not thinking in terms of a novel? There is no conversation, no dialectic between the short stories and the novels?
Not until I realize that some of the stories have fit together. And there's a point at which they start collecting, and I see that there's a pattern, that I've been unconsciously forming some sort of pattern, some sort of larger story with these smaller tales, and that at that point I begin to write chapters, and then I don't think of the stories I write as stories, then they're chapters, they're parts of a novel.
But you've said that when you wrote these stories, you just thought of them as being complete in themselves.
Right, these were the germinal stories, these were the first stories I wrote that you know would have prompted questions in my mind, but I didn't realize at the time that they were going to connect to anything else.
So when does that happen? You write in the preface that you write that every time you write a short story, you're certain that you've come to the end and that's it. Mm. So when does it suddenly become something else? Does it sit in the back of your head and like an itch?
Usually it has to do with a title that I can't let go of. The stories start collecting around a title. And you'll notice that some of the stories have their title, they become the titles of an entire book. For instance, there's a story, Love Medicine, but it became the binding metaphor for the rest of the book. So often, like the Plague of Doves became a binding metaphor for the other books, for the rest of the book.
But you don't start with a title. The title.
No, I'm saying...
What do you start with? A specific character, a plot idea? Some people say that they start with an image.
It's usually the image, yes, but also
a man
this,
walking down a dusty road or something like that.
Right, yeah, it's Faulkner. You know, it starts with that image. But the title that I use collects the stories around it. And usually my titles tend to have a mixture of high and low culture, the Bingo Palace, the Beat Queen, some, you know, that sort of thing.
So what is what am I to read into the fact that you've chosen The Red Convertible as the title of this book?
Well, we were going to use an entirely different title, and I was half asleep one night. In fact, the book was underway, and I just saw this coyote behind the wheels of a red convertible that's on the cover, and I thought, that has to be the book. It's The Red Convertible, and it's been that all along. So yeah, I smile every time I see the cover. This is one of those books that...
It is funny.
I like the cover so much.
You get the feeling that these are all going to be funny stories when you see that.
Yeah,
cover.
You do.
Not
and some
all of
are,
them
but
are.
Not all.
Did you start off writing short stories? Most writers start off learning how to write through the write short stories and then eventually decide that they might want to try a novel.
No, I was a poet, and I saw myself very, very much as a poet until I realized that my poems were becoming narrative poems. And then I thought, I should write a short story. But I actually had to tie myself into my chair in order to sit down long enough to write a piece of prose. I hadn't realized that I just couldn't sit still long enough to write. And that was my problem. So my first stories were very, very short. And then, after I tied myself into the chair, I'm distractible, I guess. They became longer and longer.
Short in the sense of a poem being, even a long poem is only 3 or 4 pages. A
right.
short story, 3 or 4 pages is very, very brief.
They were very brief.
Was it all about voice in both cases? Because so many of these stories are told in first person.
Yes, it really is not as much anymore. I find that I'm drifting toward different voice in my own voice somehow. But I would hear these voices telling me the stories. I don't mean hear them literally, but hear the word, but mentally find the words appearing before me as though I was really, that's the best feeling for a writer, as though you're almost taking dictation.
Does that happen often? Because I'd love to have that experience.
It's a wonderful experience. It doesn't happen often.
Now, when you looked at these stories, were there some that you hadn't seen for a long time? Were you surprised by some that you hadn't remembered fondly that turned out to be really good?
I was surprised. I was. And I was surprised at how much they had changed and how many versions of some of the stories there really were.
Well, were you tempted at all to rewrite some of them again? Because some writers have told me that for the collections, they just saw certain flaws that they couldn't allow to be published.
I think I did rewrite the ending of a couple of them. Just took a few trims here and there. I couldn't help it.
Many of the characters reappear in different stories, sometimes as a young person, sometimes later in life. Do these characters live in the back of your mind and then you realize you're going to have to write about them again?
Well, they did, and I'm not sure if I haven't moved on to different characters now. I mean, these people were compelling for, 20 years. This is 30 years worth of stories, and I think I have other people now.
Because a character might be the narrator in one story, mm-hmm. and in another, we're hearing about her from someone else's point of view. If we read enough of these, we really get a rounded picture of the person. We not only understand the way that person sees the world, but the way other people see that person.
Well, I didn't realize it would happen. Again, as I started writing them, I didn't know that they would ever connect. But they do. But they have their own internal questions that I then have to answer later on.
It's led some people to compare you to Faulkner because he created a county. You've created
a reservation
and a family.
And a family and
because one reviewer pointed out that pretty much all of these people are related in some way or another.
I'm going to have to start writing on my walls. I think he did that too.
Many of them, like the members of the Cashpaw and Nanapush families, appear in the novels as well. Have they come to feel like members of your family?
No, I have to deal with members of my family. I don't have to pick up after these people. It's great.
Well, although your father was German-American, your mother was part French, you are often classified as a Native American writer. How do you feel about that characterization?
You know, I would characterize myself as a mixed blood, and I have mixed feelings about it. On one hand, I'm extremely proud of my origin on my mother's side. And on the other, it does classify one to some degree but I haven't let it stop me from writing about the German part of my family and my life, and about, I would say a third of the stories are probably not set on a reservation and don't have Native characters.
But the other two-thirds are about a people who have not been written about all that much. I wonder if there's a responsibility attached to being one of the first people to write about them. You're not the first person to write about Native Americans, but about these people in Minnesota and North Dakota.
Well, if there were, I don't think the stories would work. I write about what I write about because it compels me and I can't do otherwise. And the Native part of my background, the Chippewa or Ojibwe, is extremely compelling to me. And I was raised close to that culture and have made it part of my life to be even closer. So I have to write out of what I live with in some degree now.
There's also the influence of the oral tradition that comes out of these people that probably started originally with the poetry.
Well, I would say that both sides of my family are, in the oral tradition, to me, is not some sort of anthropological set of stories that people tell over and over, you know, creation myths or anything of that sort. To me, it's sitting around the table or sitting around just telling things you remember about your family and laughing and telling stories about people in the town, people on the reservation, what people have done, and laughing a lot. And that, to me, is, if that's a tradition, that's how I love to experience life.
Has going back and putting together this book allowed you to see the full body of your work more clearly? Do you think that it will affect the way you write in the future?
It feels to me as though I've completed part of my life work.
So this is a kind of a summation in an odd
way? It feels as though it is, yes, for the time being. And I'm working on something very different, much more contemporary. And I feel contented with that. You know, there's something with a coyote driving a red convertible across the front of it that looks pretty much like what I've been doing so far.
Could we talk a moment about your other business? You now own a bookstore in Minneapolis. You're going into the bookstore business at a time when a lot of people are getting out of it.
Well, actually, I've been in the business for almost 8 years. So this has been the first time that we've felt we've figured it out. So we're hoping to survive. You know, we're always on the edge, but we're hoping to survive this.
Do you think that you've learned anything about the larger writing world from being in the retail business?
Yes, I have, and I didn't expect to. I think I didn't.
It's like reviewing books. Also, sometimes you can learn things.
You can learn so much from whatever you do in the business and interviewing people. Obviously, you know, I didn't think I as a writer, I was somehow on the other side of the business aspect. But
that's why the writers get agents to take
care
of that other side.
Well, I still don't know very much about how to do my part of it, but I do enjoy selling other people's books. And I really enjoy reading and putting books into people's hands that I think people will like. And I love working with, this is a family business, so I have my daughter, and I, you know, once people come into a small bookstore, we're only 800 square feet, it's Birch Bark Books in Minneapolis, you're almost guaranteed to be part of a little family. and with all its ups and downs. But it's a tiny, warm piece of the book world.
Well, considering all the other things that you do, I'm amazed that you have time for the bookstore. Do you write short stories while you're working on other projects, or do you devote certain times to just writing a bunch of short stories?
They tend to be, I would say, the best parts of my writing life. When I start writing a short story and I know it's going to take off, I'm as happy as can be. And the rest of the time, it's torture. I'm torturing myself.
And you suggested before that you're working on another novel and it'll be different from other things you've done in the past?
Yes, and it's very difficult. You know, I love writing, but there are times when it's not easy to write about what you have to write about. And this is more a contemporary book, and it's about a marriage, and it's about all sorts of things that I just don't write about. I don't usually write about. It's about art. It's about writing. It's about history. It's a very different book than I've ever tried before.
And people are going to start asking you about the autobiographical aspects of that book. Are you prepared?
I probably won't see you at your show at that point. I think I'm going to just stay home and write another book.
Well, if you change your mind, you're always welcome back. You know that.
Thank you.
Louise Erdrich's latest is her first collection of short stories, even though she's been writing them throughout her career. It's called The Red Convertible, Selected and New Stories, and it is published by Harper. It's always a pleasure to see you.
It's great to see you, too. Thanks.